Nemoto presents theater for beginners. Augusto Boal, Political Street Theater. Narrated with Microsoft Azure using the Ava voice. Running time, approximately 27 minutes. Augusto Boal enters the story of modern theater the way a spark enters dry grass. Not politely, not quietly, and not with any respect for the comfortable boundaries that keep art safely separated from life. If you look at the 20th century's theater revolution as a long argument about what theater is for, Boal is the figure who steps forward and says, "It is for people who are not in a room yet. It is for people who don't have tickets, who don't have time, who don't have training, who don't have permission. It is for the ones who live under rules they did not write." And because of that, he becomes one of the crucial bridges between the rehearsal room and the street. Boal was born in Rio de Janeiro in 1931 into a Brazil that was simultaneously urbanizing and stratifying, modernizing and brutalizing, a society where wealth and power lived beside poverty with a kind of daily indifference. He studied engineering at first, which matters more than it seems. Engineering trains your mind to see systems, inputs and outputs, pressure points, hidden structures, feedback loops. Later, when Boal began to think of theater not as a museum of masterpieces, but as a technology of human encounter, you can almost feel the engineer underneath the poet. What happens if you change one variable in a social scene? What happens if you interrupt the pattern? What happens if the audience becomes part of the mechanism? In the 1950s, Boal went to the United States and studied theater at Columbia University. This is one of those quiet biographical facts that later becomes loud. The United States in that era is full of theater experiments, full of people trying to shake realism loose from its habits, full of debates about political theater and the limits of representation. Boal absorbs what he sees, but he does not become an American theater artist. He returns to Brazil and becomes what he will remain for the rest of his life, a theater maker whose primary loyalty is to the people around him, not to any single aesthetic school. Back in Brazil, he becomes associated with the Arena Theater in São Paulo, a company committed to making theater that spoke to Brazilian realities rather than European fashions. Arena matters because it was already an attempt to pull theater closer to the lives of ordinary people, to resist the cultural prestige that often makes theater a mirror for the educated classes. Boal directs and writes, and he learns the practical truth that political theater isn't just a matter of content. You can stage a play about injustice and still reproduce injustice inside the room. Who speaks, who listens, who is allowed to interpret, who gets to be moved, and then go home unchanged. Then history tightens its grip. Brazil's military coup in 1964 leads to a dictatorship that polices speech, organizes fear, and treats dissent as infection. This is the environment in which Boal's theater becomes more than theater. Under authoritarianism, performance becomes suspicious by its nature. A crowd is suspicious. A story is suspicious. A question is suspicious. Even laughter becomes suspicious, because laughter is collective and collective feeling is always a danger to a regime that depends on atomization and silence. Boal's work becomes increasingly engaged with the lives of workers, peasants, students, people whose voices are not supposed to be amplified. But the deeper shift is this. He begins to doubt the moral innocence of the spectator. Not because audiences are bad people, but because the social role of spectator is training. The spectator sits, receives, judges, maybe applauds, then leaves. The spectator is safe. The spectator consumes. And Boal begins to see how easily political theater can become another commodity. You pay, you feel, you leave, you tell yourself you've participated in change because you experienced emotion. So he starts to aim at the structure itself, the separation between actor and audience. He begins to ask an almost childlike question with adult consequences. Why is theater one of the only arts where the many are trained to be silent? Why is participation treated as disruption? Who benefits when most people are taught that their role is to watch? These questions do not stay theoretical for long. In 1971, Boal is arrested, tortured, and eventually exiled. Exile is not simply relocation. It is a violent education. It strips you of the comfortable belief that you can do art in your country, as if the country is a neutral stage. Exile forces you to see power as something that follows bodies, names, and ideas. Bowell moves through Latin America and Europe, and during this period, he writes and systematizes the methods that become known as theater of the oppressed. The title alone is a manifesto. It refuses the idea that theater is entertainment first and politics second. It says, there are oppressed people, there are oppressors, and there are systems that teach both sides their roles. Theater can either reinforce those roles or help people rehearse breaking them. But here is the key. Bowell does not want theater to preach at the oppressed. He does not want a troupe of educated radicals performing messages for the poor like missionaries of ideology. That would be another form of domination. Instead, he wants theater to be a tool people can use on their own lives. Not therapy, not propaganda, something closer to a rehearsal for action. This is where his most famous concept emerges, the spectactor. The spectactor is a spectator who becomes an actor, not in the sense of taking an acting class, but in the sense of stepping into a scene and trying something. The point is not performance quality. The point is agency. If theater is a rehearsal, then the quality you are rehearsing is not charisma. It is choice under pressure. The moment a person steps into a scene of oppression and tries a new tactic, speaks differently, refuses differently, negotiates differently, they are practicing a form of courage. They are testing the boundaries of the possible. Bowell's best-known technique for this is forum theater. A short scene is presented in which a protagonist faces oppression and fails. The story ends badly, not because the theater maker is pessimistic, but because the failure is the point. After the scene, the audience is invited to intervene. People can stop the action, replace the protagonist, and try a different strategy. The actors respond realistically, pushing back as the oppressors would. The audience watches the intervention, judges whether it might work, and then someone else tries another approach. Notice the genius. It turns moral outrage into experimentation. It converts the energy of complaint into the discipline of tactics. It also reveals something psychologically uncomfortable. Many of us have opinions about what should be done, but when you step into the scene and face resistance, you realize how complex change is. You learn that a clever line is not enough.
You learn that power adapts.
You learn that the oppressor does not politely concede because your argument was eloquent. And that learning happens with bodies in space, in a room full of witnesses. People see what strategies escalate danger, what strategies build alliances, what strategies misread the stakes. People discover their own impulses to appease, to attack, to bargain, to freeze. The forum becomes a laboratory where social behavior is examined not as abstract theory, but as lived rehearsal. This is the first bridge into street theater, because once you understand theater as a rehearsal for public life, you begin to see the street as an obvious stage. The street is where power is exercised visibly. Police, landlords, bosses, bureaucrats, social norms, harassment, shame, spectacle. The street is also where people already perform. They perform politeness, toughness, invisibility, conformity. Street theater, in this sense, is not theater imported into the street. It is theater that reveals the performances already happening there. Bowell develops other techniques that are explicitly suited to public spaces and everyday environments. Invisible theater is one of the most provocative. In invisible theater, a scene is performed in a public place, cafe, train, market, without announcing that it is theater. The goal is to spark real discussion among bystanders about a social issue. Someone witnesses an argument about discrimination, a staged confrontation about exploitation, a scenario that surfaces a hidden injustice. People intervene because they believe it is real. Then the performers leave without revealing the fiction, allowing the conversation to remain owned by the public rather than framed by a show. Invisible theater is thrilling and dangerous. Thrilling because it breaks the spell of passive consumption. Dangerous because it plays with consent and deception. Bowell's justification is utilitarian in a deeply ethical way. The point is not to trick people for amusement, but to activate moral imagination in a setting where people normally avoid involvement. Yet the critique remains real. If you use deception to start a conversation, do you risk violating trust? Do you risk manipulating the very people you claim to empower? Bowell would likely answer that everyday life is already full of manipulation, from advertisements to propaganda to social scripts, and invisible theater is a counter-manipulation designed to return agency. But the moral tension doesn't evaporate. It becomes part of the method's seriousness. These techniques are not party tricks. They are interventions, and interventions require responsibility. Bowell also develops image theater, where participants use their bodies to create frozen images representing a situation, an office dynamic, a family hierarchy, a political event. The body becomes language. This is crucial for work with communities where literacy, language differences, or social fear make verbal debate difficult. Image theater also reveals how oppression is spatial. Who stands where? Who touches whom? Who looks away? Who is elevated? Who is cornered? And once you see the image, you can transform it, shift the posture, move the bodies, create alternative configurations. Again, rehearsal. Again, experimentation. A thread runs through all of Bowell's techniques. He treats theater as a means of reading reality, not just expressing feelings, but decoding systems. Who benefits, who suffers, who is silent, who is punished. And he does this without needing a grand stage or expensive technology. You can do it in a classroom, in a community center, in a prison, in a union hall, on a sidewalk. That is why Bowell becomes a foundational influence on street theater and activist performance worldwide. Because street theater at its best is not merely performing outside. It is theater that understands the public as the true site of political struggle. The street is where bodies are regulated. The street is where visibility is negotiated. The street is where some people are allowed to exist freely and others are constantly questioned, searched, surveilled, or shamed. Street theater, then, is a way of contesting who has the right to appear, to speak, to gather, to narrate. Street theater has deep roots long before Bowell, of course. Medieval pageants, religious mystery plays performed in public squares, carnival traditions where social hierarchies are inverted, commedia dell'arte troupes performing for crowds, political agitprop in the early 20th century, the theater of revolutions and labor movements. In many cultures, performance begins outdoors because the indoor theater is historically linked to elite institutions. This street is where the people already are. What Bowell offers is not the invention of street theater, but a moral and practical framework that helps street theater become something more than spectacle, a participatory method for examining oppression and rehearsing change. To understand street theater through Bowell's lens, you start with the question, what does it mean for theater to be public? Public does not just mean outdoors. Public means uncontrolled. Public means unpredictable audiences. Public means the presence of authority, police, laws, norms, often more immediately than in a theater building. Public means the possibility of interruption, arrest, ridicule, misunderstanding. Public means risk. And with risk comes the need for clarity. What are you doing this for? Who are you serving? Who might you endanger? Bowell's insistence on the agency of participants speaks directly to one of the street theater's classic traps, the trap of the heroic performer. Street theater can become the stage where the troupe performs righteousness and the crowd applauds and moves on. Bowell's methods are designed to puncture that. He wants the crowd to move from applause to action, from witnessing to trying. But street theater is not only about political crises. It is also about everyday life. A street performance can make visible the small violences society normalizes: harassment, racist microaggressions, bureaucratic cruelty, workplace intimidation, domestic control. In a theater building, you can stage these things with the comfort of distance. It's just a play. In the street, the distance collapses. People recognize themselves in the scenario immediately, sometimes uncomfortably. And this recognition can be transformative if handled with care because it moves the discussion from ideology to lived experience. One of Bowell's most important innovations is the role of the Joker. The Joker is a facilitator, a mediator between scene and audience, someone who keeps the forum alive without dictating outcomes. In a conventional show, the director controls meaning. In Bowell's theater, the Joker holds the space open, asks questions, invites alternatives, challenges simplistic solutions, and makes sure the experiment continues. The Joker is not a moral lecturer. The Joker is a catalyst. This role is essential for street theater too, because public performance without facilitation can devolve into chaos, or it can become mere propaganda. The Joker function, sometimes literal, sometimes embodied by the structure of the event, keeps the public engaged as participants rather than consumers. Bowell's later work pushes these ideas into politics more directly. Legislative theater, developed when Bowell returned to Brazil after the dictatorship and served as a city council member in Rio de Janeiro in the 1990s, takes the forum model and connects it to lawmaking. Communities perform problems, explore solutions, and then translate proposals into actual legislative ideas. This is theater becoming policy laboratory. It is also an answer to a haunting question. If theater is rehearsal, where is the performance? Bowell's answer is, the performance is governance. The performance is the meeting where people speak and are heard. The performance is the public process that becomes law. Now, as we connect Bowell more explicitly to street theater as a tradition, it's worth stepping back and naming the aesthetic tension that always follows activist performance. There is a conflict between art as art and art as instrument. Street theater often chooses instrument. It is designed to persuade, to disrupt, to mobilize. Critics sometimes say this makes it simplistic, didactic, or aesthetically thin. Bowell would likely respond, "The oppressed have no obligation to be aesthetically pleasing to those who already have power. The point is not to impress the critic. The point is to change the conditions of life." Yet Bowell is not anti-aesthetic. He is anti-aesthetic as privilege. His theater can be playful, musical, inventive. It uses games, rhythms, images, and humor. The difference is that the aesthetic is not the final product. It is the means of generating participation. Beauty is not dismissed, but it is not worshipped. In this sense, Bowell is closer to a maker of rituals than a maker of commodities. The work is alive only when people are inside it. Street theater, especially in the 20th century, also includes traditions like bread and puppet theater with its giant puppets and moral pageants, the living theater with its radical experiments in audience involvement, Dario Fo's politically charged popular performance, agitprop theater in labor movements, community-based theater in post-colonial contexts. Bowell stands among these not as a stylist in the narrow sense, but as a method maker. His name becomes a verb in many places. Bowell ng a problem, running a forum, using image work to map oppression. But methods can harden into dogma if you're not careful. One of the important criticisms of Bowell style work is that it can become a kind of formula. Identify oppressor, identify oppressed, stage conflict, invite intervention, declare empowerment. Real life is often messier. Sometimes people occupy multiple positions at once, oppressed in one context, oppressor in another. Sometimes the oppressor is not a person but a system. Poverty, addiction, bureaucracy, algorithmic discrimination, fear. Bowell's later work increasingly acknowledges this complexity, especially as he introduces concepts like cop in the head, the internalized voices of authority that police us even when external authority is absent. This is crucial. Oppression is not only something done to us, it is something we carry. The voices that say, don't speak, don't risk, don't make trouble, That's not for you. Become internal theater. Bowl tries to put that internal theater on stage so it can be confronted. Street theater also faces the problem of representation. Who gets to speak for whom? A troupe of artists might perform about homelessness without being homeless, about racism without being the target of racism, about migration without having migrated. Sometimes allies can help. Sometimes they can colonize. Bowles' insistence on participation is an ethical corrective. The people most affected should not merely be audiences. They should be makers. And if they are not makers, you should ask why. Is it access? Safety? Trust? Time? If you care about liberation, you must care about structures that enable participation. There is also the safety issue. Street theater in authoritarian contexts can lead to arrest or violence. Even in democracies, street performance can be policed, misunderstood, or attacked. Bowles' methods require careful facilitation precisely because they invite real emotions and real confrontations. If you open a public forum around oppression, you may unleash pain that cannot be neatly resolved in an hour. You may invite retaliation. You may expose someone's vulnerability. Bowles would argue that the goal is not catharsis without consequence, but collective problem solving. Still, the ethical responsibility is heavy to create spaces where participation does not become another trap. Now, bring this into the present. Street theater today exists in a world of cameras, live streams, social media clips, and algorithmic amplification. The street is no longer only the street. It is also the feed. A forum scene performed in a plaza can become a viral video watched by millions. This introduces new kinds of utility and new kinds of danger. On one hand, it can broaden participation and awareness. On the other hand, it can expose participants to harassment, doxing, misinterpretation, or state surveillance. The panopticon returns not as a prison building, but as a networked reality. Every public act can be recorded. In such a world, Bowles' dream of public participation remains vital, but it must be adapted with contemporary caution. We can even ask how Bowles' methods speak to AI and the mediated world. If algorithms now shape public perception, deciding what is visible, what trends, what is buried, then oppression has a new technical layer. The oppressor may not be a person yelling in your face. It may be a system quietly downgrading your voice. How do you stage that? How do you make algorithmic power visible and discussable to ordinary people? This is where Bowles' image work becomes unexpectedly modern. You can build an image of the system with bodies. One body as the algorithm, others as users, advertisers, moderators, and the invisible flows of attention. You can enact invisible theater inside digital spaces too, though the ethics become more complex. Staged interventions online may be indistinguishable from misinformation. The underlying principle remains: create situations where people recognize power and rehearse alternatives. But the method must be responsibly reimagined for a world where reality and simulation blur. At the heart of Bowles' contribution is a radical humility about theater. He does not pretend theater alone will liberate anyone. He says theater is one weapon among many, and it is a weapon best used when it is in the hands of the people who need it. He is not asking the artist to be a savior. He is asking the artist to become a facilitator of collective intelligence. And this may be his deepest legacy for street theater, the idea that the street is not a place where you bring theater to educate the masses. The street is where people already know things about power because they live it. The job is to create forms where that knowledge can be shared, tested, strengthened, and turned into action. So, how do you talk about Bowles on a theater podcast in a way that matters? You can tell his story as biography. The brilliant young director, the dictatorship, the torture, the exile, the creation of a new method, the return, the political work, the death in 2009. But if you stop there, you turn him into a monument, and Bowles is the opposite of a monument. His work is meant to be used. A better way is to invite listeners into his central challenge. What is your role when you witness oppression? Do you clap? Do you condemn? Do you scroll? Or do you intervene? And if you intervene, how? Bowell's Forum Theater is not just a theater exercise. It is a model of civic life. A society that only produces spectators will get a politics of spectatorship. A society that trains people to step into the scene, try, fail, revise, and try again will get a different kind of politics. Street theater becomes, in this light, not an alternative entertainment, but a training ground for democracy. Not democracy as voting every few years, but democracy as the daily practice of speaking, listening, negotiating, resisting, and creating. It's messy. It's often awkward. It risks conflict, but it is real. Bowell wanted to democratize the design process itself and hands you the tools. Bowell imagines the people as architects of their own lives. How do we reduce suffering and expand human possibility? Bowell's answer is theatrical, but it is also political and intimate. You cannot be free if you are trained only to watch. Augusto Bowell is not merely a theater theorist. He is a philosopher of action. He asks us to treat every public situation, workplace, family, street, government office, online platform, as a scene we can rehearse differently. The oppressor wants you to believe the script is fixed. Bowell asks you to test that belief, not with slogans, but with practice. And maybe the most uncomfortable, most necessary question his work leaves us with is this. If you have spent your life as a spectator of politics, of injustice, of other people's suffering, what would it mean to become a spectator now? Not in fantasy, not in the safety of applause, in the scene, with consequences, with others watching, with others stepping in beside you.